again, everybody, and welcome to the Mainland Podcast, episode number 126. I'm Michael Citro. I'm the founder and managing editor of themainland.com. Welcome to the program. Joining me is my co-host, Dave Rowe, up in Tallahassee. Dave, how you doing?
I'm doing as well as can be expected. It's starting to get a little bit warm now, and that's not always pleasant, but we're Floridians, we deal.
Yes, we do. And right now we're dealing with a losing streak on the heels of a winning streak. The Orlando City went up to Toronto over the weekend and played a decent road game against a backed into the corner desperate Toronto team. And just minutes from being able to leave with a point, conceded a late goal in the 87th minute and left with no points to their credit. And that would be a second loss on the heels of the Atlanta game. And we'll talk more about the fallout from that a little bit later. But the 2-1 loss to Toronto, Dave, just give me your overall thoughts, what you saw in the game and what you did it go how you expected?
So the cardiac gives and the cardiac takes away. More times than not, it seems that we've been the beneficiaries of last-minute goals to either win a match or get the point on a draw. This time, it came back and bit us in the rear end. But as far as the match itself, obviously, we didn't have Dom Dwyer. We didn't have Yotun. They didn't have Altidore and Bradley. But Giovinco. But that evened out, and of course, unfortunately, we only found out about Dom shortly beforehand, which that one stung a little bit. But hopefully, he's going to be better. Despite that, I thought that it was a pretty evenly played game. Like you said, Toronto was backed into a corner, sitting near the bottom of the table with a lot to prove. They obviously had home field advantage. We all know how hard it is to win on the road in MLS. And despite that, we were looking like we were going to get out of there with a point, which, after Higuita scores that goal, I was pretty happy. And then I'm sure my girlfriend heard me cursing in that 87th minute as we go down with not quite enough time and not quite enough firepower to come back and pull out that second equalizer. So as far as what I expected, with the players that were out, it all depends on who's going to step up. I did think that Mueller had a pretty good game. I think he's been solid despite, everybody's going to say, well, he hasn't scored a goal in a while. Okay, yeah, but once again, look at what he's doing off the ball. I think he's, especially for a rookie, I think he's playing pretty well. El Menir had a, pretty good game. Yes, I know everybody's going to get a little upset about the backside stuff that he's giving up, but there's a lot he's doing up and down the entire field. And, of course, as I mentioned, Higuita, he had another good game, which is, 5 out of 6 since we've been talking about his turnaround. So, there's a lot of positives to take out of it. Yes, it's a loss, and that stings, especially coming on the heels of the Atlanta loss. But, there's – it's MLS. There's ups and downs. We were on a, 6-game streak. Sometimes that flips, especially when you don't have your highly paid striker up there to distract the defense and open up opportunities for the other players.
Yeah, it was a rough game. I thought that really didn't seem like either team could get a hole. Didn't have a lot going. Some moments of some flashes from Toronto, but nothing really too concerning. I thought that Telfer looked pretty good up their left side. He was really beating Mueller and Johnson down the wing and creating some issues there. But it kind of stayed scoreless for a while, and then they were able to bring on Toussaint Ricketts, and the first goal kind of came out of nowhere. It was a play in the middle of the field where Yuri Rossell, making his first start for the Lions, sticks out a toe to get the ball to get it a foot in the passing lane. Unfortunately, he toe pokes it right to Victor Valdez, their best passer, who turns around and slips in. You know, Ricketts, who's a very, very fast player. I know that people like to bag on Sané for losing his man there, but I mean, Toussaint Ricketts is going to run by almost any center back in that situation, especially off of a quick change of direction like that with the deflected pass to Valdez. But Ricketts didn't hit the net. He hit the post, and unfortunately nobody was alert to the rebound. Nobody covered up Jay Chapman strolling through the middle of the penalty area, and he was able to put it back and make it 1-0. Cat showed good fight coming back. Higuita gets his second goal of the year, a career high, and you're feeling pretty good because Orlando City had never lost a game in which Christian Higuita had scored a goal. Now, that's not a lot of games, but that's still...
It's still a statistic.
Yeah, so things look pretty good, and then late in the game, it seemed like... Orlando City would get out of there with a draw, but there was an issue along the sideline. Lost a man, he crosses it, get caught ball watching a little bit on the backside, and it's in the net. It's 2-1. But to go back to that Higuita goal, it was really an amazing run through traffic by Mohamed El Mounir to get into the box. He goes to ground, he stays with it, he gets up, he crosses it back across the box. Really could have called a penalty with the ball coming off, I believe it was Mueller, and it was a pretty heavy contact from behind, but the ball fell. And Josue Coleman alertly picked out Higuita, and Higuita put it in the net. So it was a good heads-up play by four Lions on that particular instance. But it was a good thing that Higuita scored, because it would have been pretty upset to not get a penalty out of that heavy of a contact with Mueller getting basically just knocked down from behind while he was in midair. So that made it 1-1, and you felt pretty good. But it wasn't to be. El Mounir giveth, El Mounir taketh away with the unnecessary lunge on Aro that allowed him to get to the end line and cross that ball in, and then. Johnson had lost his man. I'm not sure if he needed to be tucked in as tightly as he was. Maybe that wasn't his man. I'm not exactly sure how Orlando City marks in that situation. But then the shot comes in, and I thought Bendik probably could have had that. I don't think he was really square to the shooter when it landed. So it went in off of him. And so there's plenty of blame for the final goal to go around. Obviously, all starting with El Mounir should not be lunging in for the ball when he's in a good position. And he has both the sideline and the end line to help him defend. So the proper thing to do there is to back off a little bit and give Auro some space and maybe just cut off his lanes and make him go somewhere else with the ball. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, that didn't happen, and you have to take the bad plays with the good plays, because on another night, he steals that ball, starts to break up the other way, and you score the game winner. Who knows? But that's soccer. Sometimes it's a pretty cruel mistress, and unfortunately, the Lions come home without any points to show for it. You mentioned Dom being out. We did find out he didn't make the trip the day of the game, which was not fun because, we had asked about him earlier in the week, and we were told that he was following his own training regimen, and that's all well and good. But he was following it because he was injured, and we weren't told that. And that kind of it's been a sore spot for me all season long with the heightened secrecy of the injuries and calling everything a lower body injury.
Lower body injury.
By the way,
yes.
Dom Dwyer has a lower body injury.
the dreaded lower body injury.
Yeah, it's really ridiculous. I mean, look at the NWSL's report today. The injury report came out today. And you know that not only does Ashlyn Harris have soreness in her knee, you have Monica with soreness in her knee. It even tells you which knee. So, So the NWSL better than MLS in that respect, and requiring a little bit more transparency. Not pleased with MLS, and of course some of that is on the club for they could divulge more. You know, they could say if something's a calf or a quad or a knee or an ankle or whatever, and they don't. They choose not to do that. So
There are a lot of parts in that lower body area that could be more specific, certainly.
Until the league makes them do it, they're not going to have to do it. So it's kind of hard to get too mad at them. But at the same time, as someone reporting on the team, it's dirty pool,
it's a little bit. It's frustrating. Yeah. And I would love for everybody out there to start calling it the dreaded lower body injury, not just lower body injury, and let's truly, truly make fun of it everywhere online.
But with Dwyer out, the start goes to Stefano Pino, and Pino was just completely overmatched in the game. He was not able to hold up play to allow his midfielders to come into the game. Whenever a long ball was played into him, basically he was he was moved off the ball within a second or two, and not really giving Merom and Mueller and Sasha Kljestan time to get up the field and get into the attack and give him options. He had no where to go with the ball because he wasn't giving anyone time to come up there and join him in the attack. And on the other opportunities where they tried to send him in, he wasn't able to beat anybody to the ball. He was not able to work his way around defenders. He was shouldered off the ball very easily. And Pino hasn't had a lot of playing time this year, so that's part of it is rust. But he also needs to be stronger physically. And, we were told he was out there working on hold-up play today, so at least he's taking that to heart and trying to work on the things that he didn't do well at Toronto. So we will see how that goes and if he's needed this weekend. As of today, Tuesday night, when we record this, Dwyer was not back training with his teammates yet. We did hear that Jim Kreiss is hopeful that he'll be back by this weekend, but I think at this point you have to say if he doesn't train by Thursday, he's not playing against Chicago on Saturday night, so we may get another game of Pino starting up top. Maybe it's time to change the shape again a little bit until Dom gets back. Mm-hmm. But the team is 0-3-1 without Dom in the lineup this year, which speaks volumes for both his value to the team as the highest paid player on the team and his ability as a player. So we miss Dom and he needs to be back. Another note out of training, Lamine Sané picked up a knock, a lower body injury.
The dreaded lower body injury.
So he's, from what I've told, they expect him to be okay to play this week. But that's good because Amro Tarek left to go to join his Egypt teammates for international duty. He's on the preliminary World Cup roster. If he's on the final World Cup roster, he's going to be gone a while. So we'll find out here in a week or so whether what's going to happen with Amro and Yoshimar Yotun also gone to join Peru. He missed the Toronto game because of yellow card suspension, and now he will be with Peru through the World Cup, through the entirety of their World Cup run. So going to be a while without Yoshi. Could be a while without Amro, and Sané picking up a knock is a little troubling because then what you've got left is Schuler, maybe RJ Allen. I heard Tony Rocha was playing some center back today, but that's concerning.
It's like I joked about last week. We don't want to be yelling at the guy in the front row, "Hey, have you played center back yet?" But if Sané is out, then that's, we're almost at that level. And like you say, that's disturbing to say the least.
Yeah. So, I've been told that they expect him to play, that he sat out today, precautionary. But, of course, until he's back out with his teammates, that's just my nature. I'll stress out over it. I'll worry, and we'll see what happens this weekend. But it looks like right now we can probably say that Schuler will be in the lineup, barring anything unforeseen, whether for Tarek or Sané or both. And not sure if Allen would be the other guy or Rocha. I like Tony Rocha. I don't want to say anything about him, but he's not been MLS ready at his normal position, so I don't know about center back. You know what I mean?
Right.
So we'll see how it goes, I guess, and we'll hope for the best, and we'll see. Scott Sutter has been getting into more and more of the training drills, so that's at least a good sign. But I still think he's a few weeks away, from the sound of things. But we'll have to see how it goes. Get well soon, Dom. get well soon.
Yeah.
You know, you got a Chicago Fire team coming in this weekend that hasn't been playing its best soccer yet. They do have great players like Nikolic, who can, you know, put three on the board in any given day. You don't want to have center back problems against this team.
No, you don't. You don't want to have center back problems against any team. And earlier in the year, we were talking about how it was great that we had actual three center backs. Well, we were down to one, maybe.
Well, unfortunately, Tarek played so well that he got the notice of his national team. We weren't really expecting that at the time.
Darn it! I mean, congratulations, Amro, but darn it! So it's that's one of those really tough things. Soccer is full of disappointment, ladies and gentlemen. I don't think I'm telling anybody anything they don't know there, but it will be interesting to see who we have. Hopefully Johnson doesn't go to play another position. Not that I know people get on him a little bit, you know, but he's a jack of all trades, doing the best he can in positions that are not his natural position. And if nothing else, I mean, he puts the effort in. So I did want to mention that. Not that he's performing to the level that we would expect of a person in their natural position, but still, he does pretty good. You're absolutely right, Dom. Come back, because we need you to want to score.
All right. Who's your man of the match for the 2-1 loss to Toronto?
It's got to be Christian Aguita. He got the goal. He played. He had another one of those solid games that he's oddly had more of this year than not, or at least oddly for us in covering him. You know, I think he did a good job. You know, bolstering that defense despite goals, but he wasn't really responsible for either of them. And then, like I said, added the equalizer earlier in the game. So it was pretty easy choice for me this time.
Yeah, I agree. It was an easy choice for me too. Christian has had the best game, and he a nice bounce back from a tough game that he had against Atlanta. He did bounce back, have a good game at Toronto, played well, I thought on both ends of the field, got back to doing what he was doing before the Atlanta game. Didn't try to do too much, stayed within himself, and, you know, played safely. And you know, that's what you want out of Christian Aguita. So, you know, combine that with the goal and you've got your man of the match pretty much locked up there. So good job, Christian. You're unanimous. Did I pick?
That's his second one from us, isn't it?
Did I pick up? Did I? I don't even remember. I'm literally asking this question in a very sincere way. Did I get the score right? Did I predict that right?
Did you predict 2-1? Oh, we're gonna have to have somebody tell us, because I don't remember either.
I don't remember. I think I may have gone 1-1. I don't remember, but I kind of remember thinking that. At some point in the game, I was thinking it can't end up like this because I picked this, but I don't remember if it was 1-1 then or 2-1. So,
all right, well, listeners of the podcast, you're going to have to go out and let us know, because if he did pick it right, we are in uncharted territory, and it might be one of the signs of the apocalypse.
I don't know. It could have been 1-1, and I was thinking 1-1. It can't end this way. I'm not sure. It's they all blend together, and I really should write this stuff down.
Really should. People think, I don't know, maybe they don't think we're good at our jobs, but we should write things down because we're old.
Yes, that is true. All right, so moving on, Orlando City, of course, will play Chicago this weekend at the Purple Palace at 7:30 Saturday night. Be there. You know, go fill the stadium. Fill it. By the way, this week, that stadium got some new policies, Dave.
It got new policies, you don't say. I hadn't heard anything.
Yeah, you know, some people decided that they were going to make it rain up in here at the end of the Atlanta match, and it wasn't like dollar bills, yo. It was straight trash, homie. I'm getting really deep into this, aren't I? I don't know if I can get myself out.
you're one away from taking it too far, so I'm gonna Ant-Man you. Just back it up,
I was too deep into that. I couldn't get out. Anyway, so Alex Leitao and Alex Wolf held a press conference this week at the stadium announcing that there will be some new policies instituted if fans become unruly and need to be reminded to behave themselves. There's going to be a message on the board telling you to chill out and stop doing that. There will be videos with the players asking people not to do things they shouldn't be doing, like throwing things on the field. And there will be no bottles or cans in the stands this or anymore for Orlando City Stadium. The stadium is going to an all pour system. Everything will be put in a cup. Yes.
That's the end of the world.
As we know it. Yeah, so you will not have your can or your bottle at your seat. Now, I know this does inconvenience some people who like to have their bottle of water handy, put the cap on it, you kind of nurse it throughout the game, take a drink when they want. But you're going to have to do it with a cup now because some knuckleheads have ruined things. I can't really blame the club for doing what it needs to do to protect itself, to protect its guests. And protect the players and referees, because the truth is nobody got hurt, but someone could have gotten hurt. Some of the things that were flying were not things that would want to hit your 6-year-old, right?
No, or me either.
Right.
Frankly, We've had a lot of discussions online with various people and internally on this, and what I found extremely humorous was someone saying, how am I going to get my beer from the beer guy when he comes around? Well, he'll pour it for you and hand it to you.
Exactly. So
I didn't think it was that tough, but evidently some people weren't getting it.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people were like, there were complaints about how they're going to spill their beer now. And I'm like, how is your beer hanging around long enough for you to spill? I mean,
it's too warm to not drink it quicker.
I don't understand the concept. Yeah. I don't understand. What are you doing? Are you just like sipping it? Are you just, it's not a scotch.
Anybody who follows me on Twitter knows that this is not my biggest problem with beer in Orlando City Stadium. I won't go into it, but
right.
Yeah.
Well,
go ahead.
I've heard some people say that they're, I'm not going to buy a beer now because I can't have it in a can or whatever. And I'm like, I can understand you not buying it before because of the prices. I can't understand.
Especially the beer that you and I drink.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. And I told one person he said he didn't drink. And I said, so your problem is you're not willing to drink water out of a plastic cup. You can only drink it out of a plastic bottle. I don't know. And then other people
opening is too big and they have a drinking problem like in airplane, and so it's going to get all over them if they don't have a bottle.
People that were upset, I can only imagine that they're worried that they're going to get a letter in the mail, maybe a registered letter, saying that we caught you on video throwing something on the field. By the way, there were 38 people identified beyond shadow of a doubt, 38 people positively identified from multiple sources, multiple angles, and those 38 people will be getting banned from the stadium for 1 to 2 years. I've heard a lot of people crying about the length of this, but I've done a lot of thinking about how difficult it would be to land on a fair amount of time. You can honestly, and it's going to be based on what Alex Leitao said, the level of involvement in the incident. So, I imagine I imagine it has to do with how much, like what you threw, and that kind of thing. And what happened on the thing. It really will go back to behavior, but
you don't think that has anything to do with who the person is also?
I don't think so. I don't. I think for me, the thing that I found most difficult is how do you reconcile a suspension from the stadium when you're talking about maybe one person who's a season ticket holder and comes to 17 home games and another person who maybe comes to 3 home games a year, right? I mean, it's really mm-hmm. difficult to figure that out. Like, where is the happy medium there? Because obviously there's the amount of time you can give them the same amount of time, but it's not the same amount of games, and it's
right. That's not equal.
Right.
No.
So it's kind of difficult, and I appreciate that the difficult position that the club was put into here, trying to figure out what exactly they were going to do. But you know, there are policies that have been in place about throwing things on the field, and you know, that it's in the fan code of conduct and that kind of thing. So it's stuff that's been on the books, and now it's like now we're gonna start acting on this. They're also going to install some more cameras, so if things like this happen again, more people will get caught. And so basically, you just don't want to do this. You don't want to be a jerk. You don't want to throw things. It doesn't help anybody. It doesn't do anything good. You may be frustrated. You may think that the ref has it out for your team, which we've said repeatedly on this program that
yes,
you know, you should never confuse ineptitude with someone being out to get you.
Correct.
And you know, the bottom line is that that's not proper behavior. And if you're condoning that behavior, or you think it's no big deal, you're more part of the problem than you are the solution, because there are way more of us who think that you shouldn't be throwing things than there are that you think that it's okay to do it. And
there were 20-some thousand fans there, and they've banned 38. Now, granted, those were the 38 that they knew for absolute certainty. There were more.
Right, you can't get a
that pick. They couldn't determine, yeah,
you can't take a pixelated still, about a small fraction. Shot of somebody. You can't take a pixelated shot and say that's definitely, you know, so and so. And other people may have paid cash for a supporters section, you know, seat, their supporter section ticket, and they don't know who it is necessarily, and that kind of thing. And then some people sell their tickets, their game tickets. So you could look at it, and even if you, I was talking to somebody this week about, like, well, they know where everybody's sitting. I was like, well, what if that person sells their tickets? Or in this standing section, you can stand pretty much anywhere. So how do you know who's who?
Right.
You know, you have to be able to identify them. And that's what they did. They caught the 38 people so far. They're still working on it, but they've caught 38 people that they could positively identify for sure.
They were incredibly diligent about making sure that they didn't do more harm than good in the laying down of the law here.
To those who called this a knee-jerk reaction, I would like to remind you that it took them a week of studying the problem and thinking about it before they acted. That's not a knee-jerk reaction. A knee-jerk reaction would be to come out that night and do, you know, lay all this out that night. They gave this quite a bit of thought. Overall, Dave, what do you think of the appropriateness of not only the measures that the club has taken, but also the length of the bans?
I think it's as fair as it can be, as far as the length of the ban goes. Like you said, it's impossible to keeping track of how many games a person, you know, you could tell somebody, okay, you're not allowed to come back for X amount of games. Well, for somebody, if they only come to two a year, you could be talking 10 years, you know, versus a season ticket holder. So it's that would be ridiculous. So there will be people who feel that it's impacting them more than somebody who doesn't come as much. Okay, well, guess what? Don't throw stuff on the field. There's a rule that I don't know who of the listeners remember Will Wheaton, but Will Wheaton was played the kid on Star Trek Next Generation, and he's a big gamer guy. He went to a conference years ago when all the online, like the kids were online yelling and saying, you know, bad things to each other, and he basically went out and did this speech, and he said, "Look, don't be a dick." And it became known as the Wheaton Law, or the Will Wheaton Rule. And I think we should apply that to all situations. I've taught my kids that. Mm-hmm. That's the basis of what I've taught them. Just basically, like, if they when they argued, I would say, Will Wheaton Rule. And they would know, okay, stop being a dick. Mm-hmm. Same thing goes here. Don't be a dick. Don't throw stuff. One, let's say that you have been drinking and you're throwing your beer can. One, why are you throwing away the beer? Two, if you have been having some beer, you might not be as good of a thrower as you think you are, and you could club somebody in the head with that thing. Three, even if you get it all the way to the field, maybe you hit a player, maybe you hit a photographer, who knows? It's a really dumb thing to do. And one would hope that we want Orlando City followers, whatever you want to call them, fans, supporters, etc. Doesn't matter what you call them. People who are in the stands at Orlando City games, you want them to be an example for the rest of the nation and the rest of the league, not the one that gets laughed at by the rest of the nation and the rest of the league.
Exactly. It's just be – embody the person that you think that you know, that people can – would aspire to be like. You know, we all get mad. We all lose our cool. But right there, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. You're about 100 times more likely to hit our poor photographer who's not getting paid to be there than you are at hitting, you know, that referee that made you mad. You know, he's not generally going to hang out beyond the end line where you can get him, or beyond the sideline where those things are not getting there. Many of the people who threw things didn't make it out of their section. So they're hitting their fellow fans. It's not a good look. It's not a thing that should be done. We don't condone it in any way. And, you know, if you think it's harsh, well, you know, that's like your opinion, man. But at the same time, you know, the club needed to come out and make a strong statement. We're not tolerating this. You know, if you give somebody a 3-game ban, big freaking deal. You know, see you guys next month. You know, that's like, you know, you catch your kid doing something bad. You don't ground them for 2 minutes. They'll take away the video game for like a half an hour. You take it away for a week or a month or something. You know, it's you have to send the message. And I think that the club did about as well as can be expected. This is a very tricky thing. You do not want to alienate the people that have, you know, have been your patrons. That's not what you're about. But at the same time, you have to make this a comfortable environment for everyone. And I think in the end that the fan base is smart enough to learn from this.
Look, if you are condemning the club in bringing out this new policy, I think you're on the wrong side of history. You know, tweet at me, whatever you want, but this is something that shouldn't have even had to been instituted, because it shouldn't have happened in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, you can allow a lone idiot to act alone, but don't join that person and say, well, that person did it, so I'm going to do it, and look how passionate we are. That's not passion. It's thuggish behavior. It's ridiculous.
It's mob mentality.
It's petulant. It makes you look like a baby that didn't get its way and threw all of its toys out of the crib. And it's just not – nobody around the country will look at this and say, ooh, look at that passion. Nobody's doing that. They're just saying, you know, what a bunch of spoiled babies that, you know, they can't take, you know, a bad call. We've all dealt with bad calls in our, you know, in our sporting lives, whether it's been while you're on the field or on the court or wherever, or if one of your teams, we've all dealt with it. And yes, it's frustrating. Yes, you feel like it's costing your team the game. But you know what else costs your team the game is not allowing the team to play the last 90 seconds because you've made an unsafe environment on the pitch. So,
absolutely right.
And that's what happened to Orlando City against Atlanta when they were really probably – I mean, they may not have scored in that 90 seconds, but they definitely They looked dangerous, and they definitely were getting the ball forward. So, you know, you never know what could have happened. But these policies, Dave, are now in place, and we will have them moving forward. And it's time to move on and to behave better and to make the collective MLS world and soccer world forget about this event. And
My only last point is I never drink beer out of a can anyway.
And behave better in the future. And by the way, and Alex Leitao was careful to point this out, and we pointed this out last week, it was not just coming from the supporters section, it was coming from all areas of the grandstand. So and
correct.
And many of the people that were identified were not from the supporters section at all. So
absolutely.
There you go. And we'll see if the next bad call happens, and we'll see what we've learned from or whatever. And the ironic thing was just that it was an unevenly and poorly officiated contest, but the straw that broke the camel's back, even though it looked like a foul at the live motion, it wasn't even a foul. So
no, it was not. And unfortunately for Will Johnson, his face is now a meme.
Well, he's been a meme before. It's not.
He has.
He makes some really great faces.
He really does. I mean, let's give it to the man. He's good for meme making.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed the expressive faces. We've caught many of them. Our photographers have caught many of them. They're great. Let's turn our attention to the Orlando Pride. They have two games. It's a double game week for the Pride. They face the first place North Carolina Courage Wednesday night. Come to the stadium, see that game. There's a lot of U.S. women's national team players involved, not only Orlando's with Morgan and Harris, but you know, if you got Crystal Dunn and Abby Dahlkemper, and on and on and on. A really outstanding roster from the North Carolina Courage. They finished last year as the runners-up, and they are a very high-quality team, have not been beaten yet. And Orlando City has had – or Orlando Pride, I should say, has had have had some success against this team in years past. Beat them 2 out of 3 times last year. And they split their games, each winning the home game the year before that. So this is a team that Orlando has had their number a little bit, has been able to play with toe-to-toe, even though they've been basically the class of the league, them and Portland, and Orlando Pride coming off a win over Portland. So this is a very important stretch of games. I think it'd be great to see a big crowd at Orlando City Stadium. And then the Pride will take go back on the road for 2 games. They will play at Chicago and Seattle. In fact, they've got the lifetime game of the week on Saturday, so it's an Orlando versus Chicago doubleheader, although in different cities. Mm-hmm. So
I do want to go back to the game that's going to be tonight as this podcast drops against the Courage, and mention that Ali Krieger is buying a beer for the first 150 people to show up at the stadium. So,
well, they got to buy the tickets through that link that we posted in Lion Links. If you buy your tickets through there, you're one of the first 150 to do that. And we don't know if that's still good or not, but
we have no idea because we're recording early, but I mean, it's worth a shot.
Do it and see, you know, click on the link, buy your ticket. And even if you don't get the free beer, you're probably going to enjoy still a good soccer game.
And I only wanted to bring it up to give Ali kudos for doing something to get, you know, people out to the game. So, you know, because obviously Michael and I, we keep wanting everybody to go, and I don't know. I think maybe people will listen to Allie more than us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wonder how much of it really is Allie and how much of it's Allie putting her face on a marketing campaign. But it's,
you know what? Who cares?
It's great either way. I think North Carolina actually give their I think that team gives I think they give a beer to every home game to season ticket holders. If you buy a season ticket holder, I think you get a beer every game. So that's pretty good. And then they also have an award after the game for their player of the game, which is beer centric also.
You know, if there are several craft beers, including Orlando craft beers, that are in the stadium, that might be a great advertising thing for one of them to do at Pride games, is to offer something like that to everybody.
Yes, offer it to me first, and then if that goes really well, then you can expand the program. That's what I think. So, a couple of big games for the Pride. Of course, going back on the road, they're going to Chicago and Seattle after the home game against North Carolina to cross off this tough stretch of the season where they've got 5 out of 6 on the road and the one home game against the unbeaten first-place team. They've already done quite well on this the first 3 games of this section. Mm-hmm. They've got 2 wins and a draw on the road. If they get a home win against North Carolina, maybe get another point either at Chicago or Seattle, that's a phenomenal stretch of games at a time when the offense hasn't even been clicking. So go support the Pride. The Pride, actually, when they go to Seattle, will not have Ashlyn Harris or Alex Morgan, assuming that they get called up to the U.S. women's national team for the friendlies against China, because for some reason Jill Ellis decided that she wants everybody there on the 1st. And even though the game isn't till the 7th,
Because Jill Ellis is going to Jill Ellis.
Because reasons, I guess we don't care about the the domestic league.
We could we could go into this. I don't know if you want to, but we could absolutely go into that.
I think we both are against this. We both are in agreement that a couple of training sessions, especially for veterans like Morgan and Harris. Mm-hmm. It's not worth pulling them from their national from their club team duties. I mean,
not when you're trying to grow the league.
We both are in agreement. The U.S. Soccer Federation has a vested interest in the success of the NWSL as a place for their players to play, as a place to keep their players fit and playing against some of the top competition in the world, and not overtaxing them to call them in from Europe on for friendlies and that kind of thing. So they have an interest in doing what's right for the league and growing the league and making sure that the league flourishes. And this is just not the way to do that. It's just there's no point in doing it. Two extra training sessions before a pair of friendlies with China, that's not going to get you through your World Cup qualifying.
I know that Harris did play a little bit last time, but historically speaking, Ellis does not play Harris. So having her not go out there 6 days early, I think it would be okay.
Exactly. That's a sore point. And somebody brought that up when we first put it out there on Twitter was, I look forward to not seeing Ashlyn Harris play and miss a game for no reason. Because that's probably what's going to happen. You're going to see Alyssa Nair in both of those games against China. And
very likely.
It's a shame that the U.S. Soccer Federation is treating the NWSL like this, and they're going to pull all of their star players that week from that weekend's games, and of course it's going to affect some teams more than others, but in the end it's unnecessary. I mean, it's just unnecessary. So as much as I support the U.S. Women's National Team, I think
they're
very much in the wrong on this one. So. The pride of a chance to have an outstanding stretch in what looks to be their toughest stretch of the season, schedule wise, and that will set them up nicely for a back half run toward the top of the table. So this will be a great barometer, Dave, for to see where the pride is in relation to North Carolina, and how much work still needs to be done. So go out and check that out. And we got more coming on the Pride with our special guest. We'll get to that interview right after this. Joining us this week on the Mainland Podcast, we're very pleased to have with us from the Orlando Pride, Tony Presley. Tony, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So it's been an interesting year so far for the Prides. A little bit of comings and goings from the various players on the team, the internationals, and that kind of thing. It's kind of kept the roster, or at least the starting lineup, a bit in flux, and it's allowed you to get onto the field quite a bit this year in various positions. How do you feel that your season is going so far, as well as the team's?
I think personally, I have played multiple positions thus far in the season, and just whatever the team needs of me is what I'm going to do, and whatever I'm asked of is what I'm happy to do for the team. And I find myself in the back and to the wide left and in the midfield, and as I said, whatever the team needs, I'm happy to do. And I think collectively as a group, I think we're unbeaten in six right now, and I think we're finally, hitting that streak. I think we can keep this going and have a good game against Carolina. I think we'll have a good run, and certainly make a good run for playoffs.
Now, you mentioned Carolina coming up. What are the challenges both for yourself in that match and then also the team?
I think just personally, just being focused, being ready, and having a good game, being strong mentally, and focused for a whole 90 minutes. And then for as a team, I think North Carolina, they're a good team. They're number one. They haven't lost yet, and they're fast, they're physical, they're a blue collar, hardworking team, and I think we need to match that mentality, and then I think we need to impose our style of play. And I think if we do those two things first, or sorry, do those two things with first matching that mentality, I think we'll come out on top. But I think, you know, we need to go in and have a good mindset and stay focused for a whole 90 minutes and know that it's not going to be a walk in the park. They're a really good team. And I think if we come out ready, we'll have a good game.
How much does it help you as a player, and how much does it help the team, if any, to know that you've had success against a very good North Carolina team over the last couple of years?
I think, you know, it always puts a bit of confidence there. I think, you know, we know they're a good team, and we know that we've beaten them before. They are beatable, as is any team, but we definitely need to come with our A game in order to win. And I think, you know, at home, such a great advantage for us. Haven't been home in, what, two games now, so people are excited about that. And I think as long as we, you know, stick to the game plan and collectively as a group and, you know, all 18 people are ready to do whatever it takes when they're called upon, I think we'll win.
Speaking of that home field advantage, what is it like for you playing in Orlando City Stadium in front of the Pride fans? Describe that for us.
Oh, it's phenomenal. I think we have the best atmosphere. I love our fans. It's so intimate, and they're wonderful, and the wall is amazing, and it's also pretty neat that I get to play in front of my family every home game, so because they get to come up since I'm from, you know, only an hour and a half away, so every home game is pretty special for me.
Do you guys do anything in training to simulate what a crystal dun brings to the field? Is there any way to, like, you know, get a sense of her?
I think, you know, she's just a handful. I don't think there's anyone that's quite like her, but I think we've gone over, you know, tactically how we're going to defend, how we're going to attack, and how we want to just go out and play our game against their very unique formation of that 4-2-2-2, basically. So we've gone over video and film, and Tom has even drawn up some things for us. I think, you know, we're prepared, and I think we just need to stay focused and, you know, go out and win.
Switching gears slightly, obviously I know that you have the same goals as the team, you know, making the playoffs and, you know, going further than last year. What about yourself personally as a player? What is it that you're hoping to accomplish just for you? I understand that it might help the team, but, you know, what goals are you setting for yourself?
I think just, you know, bringing my A game anytime that I'm called upon. And I think just training to the best of my ability as well, giving the team, you know, 100% of whatever I have to give, whether I'm playing or I'm not playing, I think. You know, you can never tell. And I've played in games and I haven't played in games, but just try to be positive and understand that, you know, my role may change throughout the season and just be ready for when I'm called upon. And I think that's the biggest thing. Just stay ready, be positive, and, you know, give all that I have at training and in games and to my teammates, you know, on and off the field.
Now, Tony, you guys are in the midst of probably the toughest stretch of the season. You have the five road games with the one home game lodged in between, and the one home game just happens to be against an unbeaten team. But already in this stretch, you got your first ever win against Chicago, first ever win against Portland. Do things feel a little bit different, and how do you feel the team is positioned once you get out of this tough stretch of games?
I think, you know, we're doing much better than we were, you know, at this time last year. So I think, you know, that's something to be excited about. And I don't think we're playing our best soccer yet. So I think that's also something to be quite excited about, too. You know, we have everyone back now, and I think we're finally getting comfortable learning each other and things like that. And I think, you know, if we come out tomorrow prepared and we get a win, I think it's just going to, you know, carry momentum into these next away games.
Now, you mentioned being prepared. You're fairly, at least within our community, fairly well-known vegan and cook. My question is not the how hard is it being a vegan and a professional athlete. I'm sure you've gotten that a million times. My question is, when will we see the return of What's Cooking with Tony Presley? Because, frankly, you went from episode one with 8,000 views to episode four with 57,000 views. And I think that that growth speaks to an audience that wants to see this.
Wow. I'm not certain, but, you know, hopefully I can do it again soon. I really enjoy it, and it's fun having different teammates on every time. I think, you know, the audience and fans really enjoy that because they get to know a bit about, you know, teammates they don't know too much about, like our rookies and whatnot. But, yeah, I hope I get to do it soon, and I got to come up with some good recipes to show people then, I guess. Give the people what they want.
We are waiting, those of us who have watched. Just bring it back. It's like it's like a television show that's gone away. It's on hiatus. You're like, when's it coming back?
Oh, no. Right.
Instead of Game of Thrones, it's a Game of Tones, I guess.
That was so bad.
Tony, I'm glad Dave brought up the vegan thing, because from your first year with the Pride to your second, I don't think I've seen an athlete transform themselves physically as much as what you did. Part of that was the diet change. Part of it was a workout change. Can you tell us a little bit about that, the workout part of it, and also maybe what attracted you to trying the vegan lifestyle?
Yeah. So, you know, my first year here wasn't the season that I envisioned having. And, luckily I just stayed in Orlando in the off season, was able to use the facilities and take advantage of deals. And, I had my whole entire off season scripted out for me, from everything from my weights to my running and recovery. And I just stuck to it. And I knew that I wanted to make a change and I wanted to be better, because I knew that, you know, what I had shown wasn't the real me. So yeah, I just stuck with it, and it was hard at times, you know, being out there almost every day by myself. And around just before Christmas, I was interested in what being vegan was all about. And I got a cookbook and I just started trying places around town. And I was like, whoa, like this food is like pretty good. Because I think vegan food has this like the stigma around it, that it's terrible, that it's bland, that it just tastes like rubbish. And so it was really good, and I kind of just stuck with it. Kind of don't really know why, actually. So random, but I'm glad that I did, and now I'm not going back. So I think, yeah, definitely the diet and the fitness regime definitely helped me get to a place where I knew I should have been. And yeah, I've been happy, and it's going really well.
You mentioned, you know, people being able to get to know the rookies. Who is there anybody who has stuck out to you or impressed you so far this season? You know, one of the new players?
I think not necessarily a rookie, but Emily Van Egmond.
Sure.
I've played with her before, and I haven't played with her in a long time. And, of course, I've seen her on TV, but just having her here in person, you just realize and remember how gifted she is with her movement, with her technical ability. And I think she's really exciting to watch, and happy to be playing with her again. And I'm happy she's here, because I think she brings a lot of quality to our squad.
Well, Tony, before we let you get out of here, I just wanted to bring this back to something you said earlier about the team not really playing its best soccer yet. I think we have expected probably to see more goals being scored, for example. How does the team take that next step and start playing its best soccer?
I think just knowing that we have so much more to give, and we have so much further to go as a team. And individually, I think like as you said, we probably haven't been scoring as many goals as we wanted to, but I think, you know, it's going to come. And I think if we keep pushing and we keep believing, those things will happen for us. And I think once we have that breakout game where we score like 3 or 4 goals, like we're going to completely change and we're going to take off. So I'm just excited for that because I know we have it in us and I know, you know, we have shutouts now. So I think the next piece is like having the attacking ability.
Tony Presley from the Orlando Pride, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate you stopping by, and we wish you the best of luck, not only against North Carolina, but the rest of the season.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
All right, Dave, let's head into some stoppage time now. Before we do that, we want to thank again Tony Presley for being here. We had a little some connectivity issues, but I think overall you could hear what Tony had to say mostly, and yeah. It's nice to have her on.
No, oh, absolutely. She was a lovely interview, and it was I wasn't actually kidding about that whole cooking with Tony Presley thing. I wanted to come back.
Yeah, I'd be down with it if they had more bacon in vegan food.
It might go against the whole thing, but okay.
A little more bacon, you know, some steak, and some pork, and I'm there.
So I think what you can do is whatever they're using tofu, you just substitute steak.
Yeah, that sounds good.
There you go.
All right. Dave, we have our Ask the Mainland podcast segment here. You can ask us anything. You can do that on Twitter by hitting us up on at the Mainland and using the hashtag AskTMLPC. Nobody did that this week, unfortunately, but that's okay. Because
to be fair, we didn't ask soon enough.
We
asked like 3 hours ago.
But you know what? Should I really have to ask people to ask me questions?
I know. Maybe they just enjoy, you know, wanting us to want them to. I don't know. But so consider us asking now.
Okay. So yeah, anytime you want to know anything, doesn't matter. Hit us up. Ask the Mainland podcast anything at hashtag AskTMLPC on at the Mainland, or you can hit us up on Gmail, our Gmail account. You can do that. We are themainland@gmail.com. Ask us anything you like. We don't have a question in the email. We don't have a question in the Twitter, but we do have a question from our friend Mark Johnson, correct?
We do indeed have a question from our friend Mark Johnson. So, you know, friend of the podcast. And do you want to read it or you want me to?
You can read it. How may I enlighten Mark Johnson today?
Well, since you haven't seen Deadpool 2, which is what he originally wanted to ask.
Yes, that answer is no. I have not seen Deadpool 2 yet.
And thus, he had to go to question number 2. Here you go. What effect will the potential move of Patrick Vieira from NYCFC have on their ability to remain in top form?
Well, that's a great question, and I don't know that it's answerable because the fact is we don't know a couple of things. First of all, we don't know how much really is Patrick Vieira to be credited for New York City FC's success.
Ooh.
Could he be like an average manager that just has a great team, or is this something that he's doing and he's a genius? I don't know the answer to that question, so that makes it hard from that perspective. The other unknown is who replaces him. If he's replaced by somebody who's good, there is a very good chance that that they will continue to be successful. Although it would have to be somebody really that is adept at using the players sort of mostly the way that they've been used, because I don't think you can, like, if you bring somebody in and it's somebody who, for example, let's say Jason Christ's disciple and he wants to play 4-4-2 diamond, maybe that's not the best suited formation for the players that they have. I mean, it's really kind of hard to say. There's too many variables, but I think with their roster, they'll probably still be able to make the playoffs. I think that they're a quality enough team to do that, and it would be interesting to see if Vieira does leave, if one of his assistants steps up into that head coaching role.
Yeah, I agree. I think it. I would love to see him move on from there, not because of, you know, any ill will towards him, just because anytime that there's turnover, that can create havoc in a team. And since it's not our team, I would love to see it. Additionally, you know, of course, the rumors are that he would go replace Arsene Wenger at Arsenal. And so he would have to build that up again, which, once again, not my team in the EPL. So, okay, cool. But you're right. You know, they do have quality players. It may or may not be his team, so to speak. He might be the beneficiary of a stocked cabinet of players. But regardless, I would like to see Patrick move on, just like I said, because so it, you know, disturbs things. While we're at it, why don't we have Tata Martino get the U.S. men's national team coaching job so that Atlanta has to do something and all will be well with the world.
I like it. Let's make that so.
Okay.
I mean, you brought up.
You heard it. I made. You're right. I made the Star Trek reference. That's earlier. Right. That was my fault.
Yes. By the way, Will Wheaton.
Yeah.
Fantastic narrator for the audiobook of Ready Player One.
Oh, I can imagine so. And a great Twitter follow.
Yes, also that. And his brief appearances on The Big Bang Theory are pretty darn good, too.
Oh, yeah, they're excellent, yes.
All right, so that's all the mail we had this week, Dave. So AskTMLPC is the hashtag on Twitter. Tweet us at TheMainland. Hit us up on the old-fashioned email at TheMainland@gmail.com.
And, you know, if you ask us as many questions as Mark Johnson does, then we might start mentioning you as a friend of the podcast as well.
There you go. Dave, we actually have 2 5-star reviews to read.
What?
Yeah. The iTunes reviews have been coming in. They're very good. We're up to a composite rating of 4.5.
I feel like so Sally Fields.
And we've got 2. One of them we should have read last week. I don't think I saw it somehow. Foster 46 has left us a 5-star review. Says, this is without any doubt the best podcast for Orlando City fans. It also has some interesting guests. So we thank you, Foster, for that that nice review. And also we have from Tampa OC supporter. Mm-hmm. Michael and Dave do an excellent job of match analysis and preview, cover all aspects of Orlando City, Pride, and OCB, and have great insights from guests. If you ever want your voice to be heard, they also have fan question segments where they answer all kinds of crazy things. Highly recommend. So we thank you for that, Tampa OC supporter, as well. And so there you go. We just talked about the asking us anything, and there's a reference to it.
So, okay, so I'm calling out Tampa OC. We're going to see a ask the TMLPC question from you this coming podcast, right?
Yeah, let's get some questions in. You can
come on.
We'll let you know. I mean, who knows? We don't know what this person's name is. He could have emailed us.
He could have already. If he has, please let us know, because I certainly don't want to, you know. But
or she. It could be a she.
Or she. Yeah. Sure, kid, whatever, dog. Who knows?
If that's a typing dog, we need to get that thing on, you know, on the late night shows.
If it's a typing dog, he can take my place. I mean, because I can't compete with that.
Yes, typing dog, you will now have lion links for Monday.
Oh, that's very true.
All right. Thanks, guys, for the 5-star reviews. If you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, we'll read it. Not because we want to take part in a wank fest or anything, but it's just nice to hear. And also, it is our only real way of rewarding you for your kindness. So thank you for that. All right, Dave, before we get out of here, of course, we've got Orlando City against the Chicago Fire in a very important contest suddenly, with Orlando City having lost the last 2 games. It's a home game. Orlando City needs to bounce back, might not have Dwyer, might be a little light in the center back position. What is your key matchup for this game, and what is your score prediction for Saturday night?
Yeah, thanks to all of the notifications we got in regards to personnel or possible personnel, you know, changes for this match, makes this one really tough, because initially my focus was going to be, okay, we just need to start scoring again, and hopefully Dom Dwyer will come back and provide that spark and we can get some goals. And then we hear that, you know, Sané may or may not be in there, and then the focus shifts to the other end of the field and making sure that we have center back play. So I'm just going to stick with my original and say that we need to get back on the front foot. We need to get back on scoring. I'm going to assume that Dom is good, at least mostly, comes back, creates some doubt, and allows Orlando to score some goals. So the matchup is going to be Orlando scoring versus Chicago's defense, which is not the best in the league. So if they can score more, then whatever center backs or non-center backs in center back position are doing, I think we might be okay. If Sonny, I'm gonna do what you do. I'm gonna throw in a little asterisk here. If Lamine is in, I think we win 2-1. If he is not playing, I think it's a 1-1 draw.
All right, fair enough. I think that Orlando City right now is in a delicate position, considering injuries, considering everything that's going on with players possibly being out, with some of the guys already gone for international duty, not riding the best form the last couple of games, and it's kind of hard to say. It's for me, I think the big question mark, certainly Sané is a big question mark, but Dwyer to me is a bigger question mark. If he can't go, that's a big time issue. Some potential disruption or distraction in Chicago this week. You know, we're getting reports that Fernando Torres may be in negotiations with the Fire, so maybe there's some guys there that are a little worried about their jobs. It's kind of hard to say, but boy, this team could use a Fernando Torres, actually.
Right.
City could. Chicago has not been on a great run of form overall. It's been, we're hearing that somebody was telling me Dax might not play in this game. So I usually start in the midfield, but I think for this time out, I think I'm going to say that I've got to go with, can Orlando City's center backs, whoever they may be, cope with Nemanja Nikolic? I think that to me is the biggest matchup problem on the field. We might see the return of our old buddy Rafael Ramos in this game. He played 3 minutes last week.
Yep.
So we could see that. I definitely think that Nikolic has been a problem for Orlando City since he's come into the league. They've got some good players. It's a team that's not off to a great start, but I certainly think that they're capable of doing more than what they've done so far. So that's the big one for me. Can they stop Nikolic? Nikolic at the not only against the back four, but also through that defensive midfield, which will almost certainly be Guida and Rossell again this week, unless there's a shape change, I would say. And then Richard Sanchez, the goalkeeper for the Fire, has been pretty decent. So I'd say he's a guy that Orlando City's gonna have to find a way to score against him. If Dom's not in the lineup, that's a big problem. It's shown to be a big problem because the goal last week came from a good run by a fullback and a defensive midfielder's shot on goal. So none of the offensive weapons that Orlando City were able to get in on the scoreboard last weekend against Toronto. So those are the big things that I'll be looking for this week.
So despite me choosing the offense and you choosing the defense, we both hedged our bets on offense and defense. So essentially we're in agreement, which is never good.
But I think the primary one is stopping Nikolic. You see the primary one is Orlando City scoring.
More so I just, that was my initial one before I heard about Sané, and I just kind of decided to stick with it. So what we do know now, listeners, is that everything will be decided in the midfield.
Yeah, where they happen to have Bastian Schweinsteiger and Tony Chani and potentially Dax. I mean, who knows?
If Dax, Ginger McCarty is not in there, then I feel a little bit better.
Yeah, but
and I say that as ginger. So
they still have Basti, so that's
they
not,
do have
not
Basti,
a bad
but
person.
I know, but I had to bring up the whole ginger thing because I'm a ginger.
All right, well, I didn't give you my score prediction yet, so I think
oh,
to
come
me,
on.
I'm going to go with just a gut feeling that this feels like a 2-2 game. That's all I can say. To me, it feels like a 2-2 game. And I think that would jibe well with Chicago not being in great form and also Orlando City maybe being a little bit of trouble at the back. So
I can't argue with you, but although we did talk about you not doing your gut, doing your head, but
the two harder ones would be Orlando City getting two goals, especially if Dom doesn't play. So I don't know. There's not been a glut of shutouts for Orlando City this year.
Unfortunately, no, there haven't been.
So we'll see. We'll see if the lads can come up big on Saturday night against the Fire, and get things back going the right direction. It's interesting. I like to read the body language and see how the powers that be are kind of handling things. And it really feels like to me that the players and coaching staff, they don't seem to feel like they're on a bad run right now.
They don't
seem like they're still pretty confident. So I think that's a good sign. I think that Jason Christ really likes his team this year, and I think that we've seen an unending and just continuous, almost a swagger from him this year that wasn't there in the past, that he feels good about his team. So we'll see.
He's been much more active on social media this year.
He has. I think he's trying to be the kinder, gentler Jason Christ this year. But
not the scowling on the sideline with his arms crossed Jason Christ.
Yeah, but I feel like if the team doesn't win this game, that some of the Fire Christ people will be back in droves, because you can't have troughs. You can only have crests, right? You can't have the gullies. You can only have the hills to make everybody happy.
Right, because that's how things work.
So we will do it all up on Saturday night. Next week, you and I will be back here to talk about Orlando City against the Chicago Fire. We'll be back here to talk about the Pride against both the Red Stars away and North Carolina Courage at home. We're even going to have a little bit of U.S. men's national team to talk about with the Bolivia friendly. So we've got a very busy show next week. Just to warn everybody now that probably next week will be a long one.
Yeah, this one was, for our standards, pretty short. So don't get used to it.
Yeah, don't say that. We haven't signed off yet. Who knows what tangent we might go off on yet.
Something will pop up on Twitter and we'll end up going off on something.
Yeah, we could talk about Barry on HBO. So I just started binge-watching that last night.
So. Yeah, but that would be spoilers because I haven't seen all of it yet.
Well, I have not either. I've only watched the first half of the first season there. So,
okay.
Which, again, that's like nothing because it's 4 half-hour episodes.
Right. And. Yeah, I do want to mention that, of course, you know, we talked about TMLPC and at the mainland. Of course, you can follow Michael at mainland Michael. I've switched my tagline on Twitter to at mainland Dave to make it simple for everybody.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I know, right? That's why I'm bringing it up. I want to make it easy for everybody.
All right. So at mainland Dave, at mainland Michael, and you can hit us up there on the Twitters. You can even ask us your questions there or just interact.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we actually talk. We talk before we do this.
We do. We talk way too much about soccer and everything else in life. All right. Yes. So with that, we will ask you to please continue to read our stuff on themainland.com. You can like us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. That'd be awesome. Please subscribe if you haven't to this podcast. Hit that subscribe button so that you're getting us automatically. Bump us up the standings a little bit. And we appreciate your word of mouth recommendations and, of course, your 5-star reviews on iTunes, which we will read on the air. So with all of that said, we can't wait to see what happens not only with the Pride on Wednesday night, but also both teams on Saturday, the U.S. men's national team coming up Monday against Bolivia. And, of course, we'll be back to talk about all of that next week. So on behalf of David Rowe, I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com, signing off by saying go City and go Pride.